Hi, this is Jackie Neal. I'm recording in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in the Tocone neighborhood for the Common Ground Tocone Oral History Project. I am sitting outside the Sawtown Tavern with my interviewee, Troy Evervine.
Evervine.
Can you say your name again?
Troy Evervine.
Okay. Looks like the mics are all set and we're ready to go. So Sawtown Tavern is on the corner of Van Dyke Street and Princeton Avenue in Tocone. If you recall, Troy has an interview that's already been posted, and this is Troy part two. And we were talking about how Princeton is essentially the end of the Distant Estates neighborhood, and Sawtown Tavern is on the north side of Princeton where the border ends. And tragically, two nights ago, on the corner of Princeton and Hagerman. I say all the names of the streets wrong. I say everything wrong. Because I lost my accent. I don't know.
Well, anyway. And you know it's Tacony when you talk about the neighborhoods.
Well, everybody says it different.
But it's the Tacony-Palmyra Bridge.
I know.
But the neighborhood is Tacony. Isn't that weird?
Wait, back up.
Tacony.
So the bridge is Tacone Primaris?
Everyone pronounces the name of the bridge differently than the name of the neighborhood.
So tell me the name of the neighborhood.
The name of the neighborhood is Tacone.
Good Lord. By the way, I'm transcribing the other interviews.
Okay.
And God forbid it cannot sort out the Philadelphia accent.
Right.
It's hilarious.
I've done my best to lose mine.
Me too.
Yeah.
So, to back up, two nights ago there was a shooting on the corner of Princeton and Hagerman.
Mm-hmm.
And I know very little about what happened, but from the news, it's a pursuit of someone that needed to be served a warrant, and they blocked him off at one end of the street and at the other end of the street and then shot the person in the car. That's pretty much all I know. And it's caused some tension in the neighborhood, and there's theoretically a demonstration tonight, a vigil for Black Lives Matter that's supposedly happening in an hour or two.
Well, yeah, I mean, just to set the scene, since
yeah,
this isn't visual,
you?
We're watching the news vans gather now.
Are they?
And yeah.
They're here?
They're starting to arrive, and the vigil is supposed to begin in about 45 minutes. Black Lives Matter is involved, you know, as they become involved with, you know, the families of shooting victims. A lot is unclear, a lot isn't known. We're hearing it was a search warrant, not an arrest warrant. So it's very unclear why they were in pursuit of this person to begin with. But there are a lot of questions, and even the police commissioner has them. And, you know, we're trying to... There goes another news van.
Yeah, there's that damn news van again.
You know, we're trying to sort through those things. It's not always easy, and we've got, you know, we've got some incendiary voices in the neighborhood, too.
Hold on, say that again.
We have some incendiary voices in the neighborhood. We've got, you know, we've got folks who just want to support the police no matter what and don't understand that holding them accountable is still supporting them. And, you know, it's a really intricate conversation that, you know, we have in this bar a lot. And sometimes it feels like we're going back to racism 101. With a lot of these conversations, like, well, you've got to start by seeing us all as people, and you've got to start by understanding, you know, none of us chose how we showed up, and somebody arbitrarily along the way decided, you know, skin color was a way to sort folks, and it's crazy, but it leads to so much fear, and the fear leads to bad stuff happening. And this was bad stuff.
So maybe you know more information than I do. The vigil is happening on the site of the activity.
Correct, which is one block
from here. Is the family coming to the vigil?
They are.
And the family is from what part of the city?
They're also from Tacony. They're you know...
They are.
Somewhere around, I think, Wellington Cottage. So, you know, I don't know, 6 blocks from here, 8 blocks from here is where this, I guess, started. But I don't, I'm still unclear if there was a chase or if right. there was a, he was just being followed. A lot of details are missing.
Yeah.
They're starting to emerge, but they're missing.
Right.
And so, you know, trying to, I've urged folks around here to allow a peaceful vigil, allow grieving people to grieve, and even if there is a demonstration, not responding and allowing that energy to, you know, be voiced is a better tactic. What's going to happen? I don't know. I don't know. I know most of the community leaders around here have chosen to stay away.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing.
Why is that a good thing? I mean, you it's don't a, have it, to...
Because I really fear it would turn into, you know, a counter-protest.
Right, that's
my biggest worry.
Right.
You know, that's my biggest worry. And, you know, that when I say Racism 101, I mean, I had a Facebook conversation today saying, you know, we need to... And I had written a long post last night, and in part I just said, you know, I urge you to be patient. I urge you not to jump to conclusions. There's a lot of missing information here. There's a lot we don't know about this entire thing. And so someone said, but then shouldn't Black Lives Matter have to wait? I'm like, well, I think they know enough to be concerned and to have some concerns that they want to voice. And they are, you know, in conversation with this family. And the family paints a very different picture of the man that was shot than what others are trying to portray. You know, he did have a job. Now, whether or not there were drug sales, I don't know. I don't know. I you know, whether there was a warrant or not, I don't know. I don't know that anyone has actually seen the warrant. I'm not sure, but I have heard that it was a search warrant, not an arrest warrant. So there's a lot of open questions, and it's that idea that somehow, just because there's, you know, we've got folks from Black Lives Matter in the street voicing concern,
mm-hmm.
and helping a family to let out, you know, some of their anger and their rage and their, and you know, their upset,
right?
That it requires a response. It doesn't.
No.
It actually doesn't. Not unless your response is to, you know, support them, whether you agree with them or not. There's an arrogance to, you know, a counter protest that just doesn't belong here, and it would send a really ugly message. Are there folks that are going to show up and do that? I don't know. I hope not. Even the loudest racists have urged folks not to do that. So we'll see. We'll see what they do. But, you know, we have, it was interesting, Monday was,
what happened on Monday? Can you tell me? You were here because it was like after 4, wasn't it?
It was right around 4 o'clock that it happened, and we had just opened, and I was upstairs in my apartment. I heard 5 shots. Tara and Charles were downstairs in the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Tara was bartending, and Charles was just finishing up cleaning, and they heard 3 shots. So even that is not clear. 2 other neighbors said, no, I counted 5. 3 with a pause, and then 2. And I said, that's what I heard. So anyway, I came downstairs. You know, Charles texted me and said the police just killed a suspect on the next corner. So I came downstairs. It wasn't long before we had something like 15 police vehicles here. There were 2 choppers in the sky, and they were, you know, putting out caution tape. Within an hour, we had news vans on our sidewalk.
Right.
You know, and the entirety of Princeton Avenue was blocked off, and it was a nightmare. There was an ambulance who took police officers. There was some type of injury. I don't think we're still clear on what the injury was.
Paddy wagon.
I mean, the police will have a stand down presence today, I'm sure. So we'll see what happens. But it was pandemonium. We were in the middle of preparing for a podcast to be recorded here at Sawtown, and I texted the guy who was leading the podcast, and I'm like, listen, there's no danger, but boy is there chaos, and you're gonna have to walk a half a block or so to get to us. And he said, dude, I grew up in Juniata Park, which is another neighborhood in Philadelphia. And he's like, I'm fine. And, you know, the woman who was being interviewed for the podcast is Feminista Jones. I mean, she's a powerhouse.
Tell us, tell us who she is.
She's a powerhouse. Big presence on Black Twitter. She was a big organizing presence during... There's a news show.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's probably ABC.
During, you know, the Michael Brown protests, she's, you know, she's a blogger, she's, you know, she's an influencer, she's a social worker by trade. Now she works for, I know it's a Linfest project, addressing poverty. So her office is in Hunting Park. You know, so when she got here and I said, well, there's all this cash, she said, oh, this happens four times a day where my office is. We're fine.
What?
But,
wow.
You know, so no one was fazed by it. And the podcast went on and they recorded. And that was really cool. And it was an interesting kind of counterbalance.
What is the podcast about?
It's a new one called Philly Blunt. The podcasters had just a really silly podcast, I think, called Johnville, that they would sit around and get drunk and talk sports and stuff. But this is a bit more serious.
Yeah.
This is a bit more pointed, and you know, they get some interesting guests and stuff to
we got an undercover cop coming over here.
We do. They get some interesting guests like Feminista Jones, and you know, so they kind of talked about everything where she's concerned. So it was a lot of fun. I think it's premiering sometime mid September.
So did you guys mention it in the podcast? What was going on? Or
we did not.
You didn't.
We did not, because again, it's going to be a few weeks, and how contemporary this will be by then.
Right.
We don't know, but those kinds of things are happening. I mean, it's been a roller coaster week for us. We were on the front page of our Northeast Times, which is, you
That's
know,
awesome.
Locally, a lot of people still read it.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a full cover.
Congratulations.
We were on the cover.
What was the article about?
The article was about our open mic night.
Great.
But it also touched on the plant-based menu. It talked about this place and the artists that, you know, come together here. It was really well written. It was a full page article, so it was great. But back to, you know, Monday night is our game night, and we had a game night.
You continue the game night.
We continue, of course.
You know, so let that actually is a great place for us to segue into your approach to the, how do I put it, like the dichotomy within the neighborhood. So I'm about to wrap up the project. The project's basically ending with this interview.
Okay.
Unless I can get Thais over here. So there's so many wonderful things that are happening in the neighborhood.
Right.
So many wonderful things happening in the neighborhood.
There are.
And, you know, I'm really excited to say that I think it's very arts-driven.
It is.
The good things.
It is.
It's not the only thing driving the good in the neighborhood. There's a lot of community activity. There's a lot of support and religious activity. But then there's this strange dichotomy of tension. And, like, people living their lives, but not everybody agreeing with how everybody you know, is living their lives. And I know that, like, isn't that the American way to always try to find somebody else that you can put down or something? But
it is.
I can't say it's totally specific to this neighborhood. But here's what I think, is that there's a concerted effort to change that, right?
Absolutely.
And it's a very difficult, it's very, very difficult. It's, and like your situation on Monday night is a prime example of how difficult it is. Something horrendous is happening, yet it's being countered with, well, number one, Sawtown is a safe haven. And it continued to be during the tragic event. It continues to be right this minute as we watch police pull up, news pull up. I can't see the corner, but maybe perhaps the demonstration's starting to gather. I don't know. But let's talk about how you're a safe haven, and whenever there seems to be a desire to show exertion of negativity, you're there to counter it with positivity.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what I see happening. So tell me a little bit about what motivates you in that way. Like, you can pull that together, like, in a split second, Troy. You really can.
It's intentional. You know, it's born of the way I raised my kids. I mean, they probably went to more funerals than they should have as children, just because that's the way things worked out. And, you know, we talked about it. We talked about what was going on, and we kept living our lives. And I encouraged them to keep living theirs. You know, so they had some really hard losses, but we talked about, you know, the people that they loved that they lost, that, you know, they would want you to go on. They would want you to keep smiling. They would want you to keep laughing. If they were still here, they would be laughing with us. That's, you know, you keep doing what it is you do. So, you know, here it's very intentional. I mean, we've, you know, as a bar, as a community, we've had a couple real tragedies. One of the bartenders that worked here in the very beginning, and she was just a fixture, and she was a lifetime bartender, and she was amazing, and she died. And, you know, we mourned and we gathered and we celebrated her life. And that was a huge loss. And then my friend Gosha, we're sitting on her memorial bench.
Oh, that's who I thought you were talking about.
No, Gosha was this year in April. And, you know, such a force of nature, and such an amazing talent, amazing entertainer, and just a thoroughly alive person. And to lose her so quickly, and it was a lot. And, you know, but we continue and we find the ways to celebrate life. And I think that that's what we just try to exemplify, because that's what we do.
Well, one of the things you just said was, in the face of tragedy, you've kept the conversation going, right? The conversation doesn't end. It has to, A, keep going, and B, be part of the healing, and C, part of, like, the solution, too.
And let me just say something. I mean, it's really important to me to build the kind of bar I want to be in. And that is one where, you know, people can talk about things respectfully. Talk about things. We talk about politics, religion, race, gender all the time. Respectfully. because I think you need to. And so one of the things that's happening right now, and this is where I'm going with this, you know, there's this example. If you just saw what was happening in this neighborhood on Facebook, there's a few misguided loudmouths who don't even recognize their own racism, spewing hate and racism all over Facebook. Facebook isn't real. I tell people this all the time. Facebook isn't real. It's social media. It's a way to get, you know, exchange pictures and stay in touch with people that you otherwise wouldn't. But it's not real life. We have conversations face to face that are much less tense than they are in that sort of one-dimensional
right,
media.
Right, right.
And so that's what I really try to encourage.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
because I'm...
Good.
But that's what I really try to encourage is, you know, conversation. It's people getting to know each other, being willing to talk to each other, being willing to ask questions, and some folks are more than willing to answer questions. I mean, I do all the time.
Right.
Everyone doesn't want to do that work, by the way, and that's absolutely fair, too. But, you know, one of the things that's kind of come of my understanding of racism and how we combat it, you know, the color of the skin I happened to be born with puts me in a position to talk to other people who look like I do. And so I'm not afraid to do that work. I'm not afraid to explain it. I try to be very careful not to speak for anyone,
mm-hmm.
but I will speak up for
absolutely
people all the time, because I think that it's important, and I try to dispel as many myths as we can. So when I interact with these people who are on Facebook, and one of them I'm certain is running for political office, even though that's unstated at the moment.
I think it got garbled by News 10.
We have someone who I'm pretty certain is running for political office. And that person benefits by pointing out the negative, benefits by being a voice for the disgruntled, you know, builds a coalition by pointing to problems that they sometimes create and then, you know, stepping in to fix them. It's age old.
That's amazing.
Bullshit playbook. But, you know, we keep calling, I won't name them, but we refer to them as Columbus because they keep thinking they've discovered something.
Oh, right, the colonizers?
that's a different term. That's Black Panther. But No, we just keep talking about Columbus because it's amusing watching someone think that they've discovered something when, you know, we've had this conversation 10 years ago. We dealt with it 10 years ago.
Right.
We realized your solutions don't work 10 years ago. And they don't work today, and they're divisive, and there's better ways to do it, and there's better ways to come together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things I point to is this bar and some of the events that we sponsor or co-sponsor, and the real diversity in the neighborhood that shows up, because mm-hmm. when something is clearly inclusive, folks do show up. There's 25,000 people in this neighborhood. When it's in veiled language, when it's dog whistle nonsense, when it's obvious that it's divisive or against, or yeah. No, they don't, and most reasonable people don't, and that's why this, what happens on the street is very different than what you might see. That's the snapshot that is Facebook,
mm-hmm.
where people have, you know, their internet muscles
mm-hmm.
all flexed, and everybody speaks in these absolute terms, and they would never say the things that they say to your face. I invite them to.
All right.
All the time. And we have much more civilized conversations as a result. But, you know, I think it's important that we're not afraid to have those conversations. I mean,
What happened 2 weeks ago when we, you know, I had come to the studio to work, and I found out that there was going to be a gathering on the corner.
Uh-huh.
Next to the lab, and it was incredible to be a part of that, you know, like with you, the counter art activity.
Right. And that's what it was.
You know, it was an art action, I guess. But can you talk to me a little bit about what was going on with that?
I mean,
this is totally separate from today.
It is totally
And it was
separate.
Less than, it was about 2 weeks ago today, I think it was.
Well, you know,
yeah?
So one of the things that's happening right now, and it is difficult to confront and sort of wrestle with, is we've got some open-air drug sales right on Tarsdale Avenue. That's really the crux of this. There have been some words exchanged with business owners. There have been, you know, folks out there dealing that are blocking the entrance to businesses. None of that is cool. None of that is okay with anyone else, you know? But in frustration, some people got together, you know, at the urging, at least, or you know, with the blessing of the police department, to, you know, kind of hold a rally. And it was a rally against crime. But, I mean, We could have called it a rally against addiction, because that's really the crux of, you know, the sex workers that we have that are on the avenue sometimes, or even the drug dealers that we have on the avenue at sometimes. You know, they've got customers or they wouldn't be there. We have an opioid epidemic. We've got a serious problem in this nation.
Yeah.
And
it's not specific to this neighborhood.
Wanting to kind of come together can be negative or positive depending on how it's handled. And I wanted the lab to be open that night. I just wanted us to be doing what we do, which is, you know, being open to whoever happens to come in. Mm-hmm. Being out on the street, and we were.
Yep.
But in a way that's we were out there making art. We were drawing a sidewalk chalk, and we made a couple of
the cyanotypes
that day. And you know, it's still creating a presence. It's still kind of disrupting that opportunity for open air drug sales. You know, we do need to, you know, have a partnership with law enforcement where that's concerned. And those things are happening.
But you're right. It was an art disruption. Like,
That's what we do here. We have dancers outside sometimes. We have, you know,
that was such a beautiful picture of the dancer on the bench.
Oh, sure. It's great. But, you know, sometimes I'm out here sweeping up cigarette butts, even though we have the ash tower and all that. And I actually sit and say, but I'm really happy for the smokers because there are eyes on the street. There's activity outside. They're creating some vibrancy even there. They're talking, you know, on open mic nights we have musicians out here playing guitar. They've formed drum and guitar circles. They've mm-hmm. collaborated. We've had street singing. I mean, that kind of energy and activity,
mm-hmm.
It accomplishes the same thing without that anger, without calling people out.
Well,
without,
there was one thing that somebody came to the where we were and said that somebody was on a bullhorn speaking to the sex workers, mm-hmm. which I don't know what's the appropriate term for.
I mean, that I think that's the most respectful
sex worker. Okay, yeah. On a bullhorn, speaking with the women on the corner. And was the interchange, you need help? Did he say, you need help? Didn't he say something like that?
Yes, there was.
Get help.
And there was actually...
And in the meantime, I was hanging out with Donnie, and she and I were creating art on the sidewalk.
Right.
And she's making these dedications to her four children, and to her husband who had passed away. She's telling me about all the wonderful things that she does. I don't know. Is it more effective to speak to them or Donnie through a megaphone?
No. and that's the thing. And
you know,
particularly when you have when you have these clashes, I mean that's I think art speaks its own language. I think it speaks a language louder and stronger than words. And I think art can heal often where words just utterly fail.
Yeah.
And so, when we don't necessarily know how to talk to one another, we can collaborate and create art together,
right.
or experience it together.
Yeah.
And I think it puts us in a different place.
It puts our mind in a different place.
It does.
One is a position of defense. And the other is a position of sharing and openness. Right?
I prefer the sharing and openness.
Yeah, I do too.
I prefer kindness. I prefer, you know, we really work to put aside our fears.
Right.
You know, but that's me. That's me. I don't want to be afraid. I don't want to walk around afraid.
No.
This whole idea of carrying a gun to me is just abhorrent, and you know, I've had people say, "Well, what if somebody comes at you with a gun?" I'm like, "Then they're coming at me with a gun."
Right.
I mean, and what if they shoot you? Well, then I'll be dead, and I won't. I still don't want to be responsible for taking a life, I don't want to, you know, be in that position. I, you know, try to be aware. I've lived in a city for a very long time. I've been fortunate to not encounter some of the horrible things that folks do encounter living in a city, but they encounter them in the suburbs too. I mean, I think we make our worst decisions when we're afraid.
Absolutely. You gotta say that a little bit louder.
We make our, you know, the worst decisions, our worst decisions, when we're afraid. When we're afraid of each other, when we're afraid of what might happen, when we're...
Right.
When we're full of adrenaline and, you know, perceive threats that aren't real or perceive threats that, you know, aren't even there. And, you know, there is this fundamental thing that I try to get people to understand, that I think, you know, many of us do, but people actually don't get this fundamentally, that just because someone doesn't look like you doesn't mean they have a different life experience than you. And what I mean by that is just they go home and cook dinner too. They put their kids to bed. They wash their clothes. They do, you know, the mundane parts of everyone's lives are pretty much the same.
Right.
You know, because I would be on the internet commenting for an hour and I'd be like, you know what? Gotta pause. Gotta go cook dinner for my gay agenda. Like, just because.
Gotta pause. Gotta cook for my gay agenda.
Yeah. I mean.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because I live by that myself. You can imagine I teach photography that I have a lot of people that think that they're going to be like the next Richard Avedon or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to remind them that when I photographed Richard Avedon, he was just another human being.
Right.
He said, "Call me Dick." Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking to myself about that Beatles song where he says, the lyric is, everybody pull their socks up.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's got to put their foot down. We all put our fucking socks on. Oh, shit. I'm not supposed to curse.
Correct.
Like,
oops.
Oops. If anyone knows me, they know I curse so much.
Yeah.
Sorry, public.
I won't tell.
Sorry, Tacone, oral history. But anyway, yeah, that to me is the embodiment of what you just said. Everybody pull their socks up. Everybody put their foot down.
Yeah.
You know.
But we don't. It amazes me sometimes, you know, you've got folks my age in their 50s who have never been to the home of a person of color. They've never, you know, shared a meal. They've never invited them over. They really continue to live such a segregated life and then, you know, don't have a lot of fundamental understanding of the people around them. And so there's fear. And, you know, I've often compared it back in, you know, the 70s and 80s and these times when everyone says Tacone was so wonderful. Everybody pretty much looked alike. You know, the black section was a section. This was very, very segregated. And so when somebody's kid did something stupid on the block, another parent thought nothing of walking them down and knocking on the door and saying, guess what your kid just did.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a level of trust, there was a level of understanding. So, you know, even to, yo, are you going to cut that grass? Because it's really high and I don't even want to look at it anymore. That doesn't have to be a conversation where people are actually afraid someone's going to pull a knife on them. But people think that. But it's like, well, you know, and then we get into the nuance, don't we? Of, what was your approach? When you asked a question, you know, and it's when people just spend time together and get to know one another, it does change the world we live in.
Right.
And I say all the time, you know, in the face of, well, this is happening and that's happening. I don't deny that. I'm not going to tell you those things aren't true.
Right.
I'm going to tell you I spend almost every day of my life surrounded by artists and musicians and writers and poets and you know, thinkers and activists and artivists and, you know, really wonderful people, and I rarely leave Tacone.
Right.
So
you
we're
got all
having,
that here.
a very different experience of my neighborhood.
Right, right.
I like it here a lot.
Right. Uh-oh.
I like it here a lot. I find that there's a fundamental fairness in most people here. That, it, you know, that have grown up here. I find that there tends to be a fundamental sense of fair play and right and wrong, and a lot of it is you just don't know what you don't know.
You just don't know what you don't know.
Right. So we've had all kinds of talks in the bar about political correctness, and I'm like, you know, that's a lazy way to say I don't want to be bothered learning how to offer you respect.
Say that again, I didn't hear you.
It's a lazy way to say I just can't be bothered learning how to offer you respect. So, you know, political correctness. There's two words we don't allow in here. One starts with an N, one starts with an F. You know, and I had an older guy in here, and he's just of that generation where faggot was an adjective or a noun, whatever. And I said, okay, I've heard the word for the last time. Don't use it in here. And he said, why? I don't mean it like that. And I said, okay. I accept that you actually don't.
Wait, he said, I'm sorry, back up. He said, I don't mean it like that.
Right. I'm not calling you a faggot. I know
what
you mean. I just use the word.
I'm just like floored.
Yeah, well, right. But again, so there's an opportunity. And he said, so, you know, but since I don't mean it the way you're, you know, it can be perceived, what's the problem? And I said, okay, that's the last word my people hear before your people put our teeth to the curb. Do you understand why it instills a certain level of upset in me that maybe you don't feel? And he said, I never thought about it that way. I'm sorry. And he never used the word again.
There you go.
But it's
good job, Troy. Jeez.
But it's that simple. I mean, you know, one of my friends doesn't like the C word at all. And I said, but I kind of use it in the British sense. And she said, yeah, but you know, remember how you asked me not to use a word and I don't? And I said, yeah. And she said, I'd like you to not use that one. And I said, you got it. That's easy. That's really easy.
To have that conversation.
To eliminate a word that is problematic for a person that I love or a person I'm trying to connect with or a person I'm trying to make a point with. And I'm willing to, you know, I'm willing to have enough of a conversation to offer some education. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with it. Because you know, we all learn when we learn. We're really building a police presence here.
How many vans?
Well.
And paddy wagons. There was a prison mobile that went by.
Yeah.
This one seems to be the bike mobile.
That's a mobile unit. We've got.
Did you see the bike rack on the back of it?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah. Here's hoping we have a peaceful evening. Because, you know, that's what we're here for. And I will say, since, you know, this is not going to be heard for a while.
It won't?
Won't?
It'll be going up as soon as I walk into the bar.
As soon as you're done. Okay, then.
Long as the Wi-Fi is working, it'll go up.
Then I will just say this. You know, this bar is a safe space for anyone. So, and we try to keep it that way. We try to keep it very peaceful, and, you know, so anyone gathered here grieving or protesting, you know, that needs to duck in somewhere and get a drink of water or anything like that, I've made that offer. I've let the organizers know that, you know, we're right here,
mm-hmm.
Because I think that that's important. Mm-hmm. I think that that's really important. Because we are community. And it doesn't mean I don't support the police. It doesn't mean that at all. I sit on the commissioner's LGBTQ liaison committee. So I meet with the deputy commissioner once a month, along with my committee. And it's about accountability. It's about, you know, training and further training. And, you know, we've gotten training into the police academy. We've gotten, you know, we impart knowledge about, you know, our trans siblings and how they're housed in prison and how they're categorized. And, you know, so we do ongoing work with them because I feel like you need to, and it's better to have a seat at the table than to not have one.
So that, you meet with the commissioner?
We meet with the deputy commissioner every month.
Every month?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're just trying to talk about incidences, talk about how they maybe can be handled differently, talk about hotspots or problems or problematic areas. You know, certainly from the LGBT perspective, that's the goal of that particular committee. But my point being, you can hold two thoughts in the same space. You can understand why Black Lives Matter is here. You can absolutely say repeatedly, Black Lives do matter, and you can support, you know, a grieving family. And that doesn't mean that I don't also work with the police and want them to be able to do a better job, and, you know, want greater accountability because I want greater safety. You know, when we are holding our police accountable and there's more transparency, it gives a better sense of law enforcement to community members. That's a really important message that people just don't hear.
Oh boy, we've got them all coming in.
And now we have helicopters. We do.
We've got helicopters, we've got vans, we've got trucks, we've got undercover cops, we've got police on bikes.
We do.
Now we have people walking towards the corner. We see people with blue and white balloons.
Right. And that was, they were asked to bring that in support of the family.
In support of the family.
For the vigil. So, you know, I think this is perfect, and this is a great example of what we touched on is we're out here doing this interview, and I think it's important, and we're doing it in the midst of this, and we don't know right now how this is going to play out. We are watching it set up, and we'll see how it unfolds.
Right.
But it's important to get the right messages out. It's important to keep sharing them. It's important to not be afraid.
Yeah. I feel very comfortable here, and it's kind of a little, I feel sad because we have about 3 minutes left on our recording, less than 3 minutes, as this begins. Kind of strange timing, but so far everything is smooth and positive, and feels good over here. I hope the family has a good experience.
I do too.
And I'm sorry for their loss. I'm deeply sorry.
I mean, that's our goal. And, you know, I want the police to be able to do their job and do an investigation. And, you know, if it comes to having accountability, I think that's important too.
Right.
Those things are not mutually exclusive. They're not saying, they're not sending a different message. And, you know, the one thing I've heard is, well, he was a drug dealer. I don't even know that for sure. I don't know that anyone does at this point, but whether he was or he was not, he lost his life, and he lost his life at the hands of the people we pay to protect us. And, you know, we're all better if we know that that was unavoidable, and there are a lot of questions right now as to whether it was. And so it's, you know, it's always a difficult issue. It's always a tough conversation to have, and the temperatures get heated. And so we try to keep it as measured as possible.
Right.
That's what we do. That's what we do.
Well, thanks for giving me Troy Part 2.
Absolutely.
And maybe there'll be Troy Part 3.
Maybe. That would be fun.
Yeah. Thanks again. Any parting words?
Yeah, let's go have a beer.
Yeah, let's go have a beer. I like that idea. Signing off.
I'm gonna proceed why we have suits.